Yeah, man. Merry Christmas. It is good to be together tonight. My name is Zach. I'm one of the pastors here and delighted to get to be with you. This is a wild time of year. There's some of you that are just coming in literally straight from DIA. Some of you have been in the bustle all day of preparing food, making food, getting food, beginning to prepare all the things. Presents are a thing. Why? This is a wild time of year. So many things are happening. Culturally, why do we do this? Depending on which channel you're watching, it's about a reindeer or it's about an old man who lives in the snow somewhere. It's about presents. But when we take away all the stuff, what's underneath it all? Why are we all here tonight? What is the story that's unfolding? I think it's, as we get into our teaching tonight, has something to do with a neighbor. And I don't know about you, I've got some great neighbors. One of them is my neighbor, Henry. Henry's 8 years old, and he's awesome. I was, a couple weeks ago, working in my garage on a Christmas present that I had to paint, and so I just cracked my garage door about 6 inches off the ground and came out a little bit later just to check on it. And as I was looking at things, flipped on the light, and all of a sudden saw something in my peripheral vision just like move, like where the garage door was. And I look over, and it's Henry's face just crushed underneath my garage door. He's like, hey, can Oaks come out to play? Can Oaks come out to play? This is his question all the time. Oaks is my youngest son. He's, you know, they're buddies. 61 times since December 1st, my doorbell has rung with Henry asking the question, can Oaks come out to play? I checked it. This Henry kid, Henry is awesome. Henry, in the summertime, he doesn't like wearing shirts, and so usually he's out and about just like half naked like you do as a little boy who's 8. But because of that, all the other kids now on the street are like, we don't have to wear shirts. None of us are wearing. It's like a bunch of feral wolves just running around together because of Henry. It's not uncommon after he rings the doorbell. We've got a mailbox that's kind of like its own little stone pillar thing. By the time you actually get to the front door and open it up, Henry's actually already out on top of the mailbox dancing. And so usually you get the trifecta of doorbell rings, half-naked kid dancing on my mailbox. I mean, it's free entertainment. You guys, wonderful. I don't know if you've got a neighbor who's like Henry, but I do. And Oaks does. And when Henry moved into the neighborhood a couple years ago, changed Oaks' life, because 61 times a month, he gets asked, you want to come out and play? Is Oaks busy? What's he doing? The plans that we made yesterday to go camping next to the pond by our house, I've got everything ready to go. Henry's awesome. And if you've had a good neighbor move into the neighborhood, you know what this feeling's like. For the last couple weeks, we've begun a study into the book of John, which I'm delighted to just tell you now, spoiler alert. We're going to be studying the book of John for the rest of this year and then into next May of 2026. Just taking a nice long soak, looking at this character named Jesus that John seems so fixated on. But our teaching tonight is rooted in John chapter 1, verses 12 through 14, just three little verses. In the New Revised Standard Version, this is what it says. But to all who received him, this Jesus, who believed in his name, he gave the power to become children of God, who were born not of blood or of the will of the flesh or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh, and it lived among us. We've seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. This idea of lived among us, this was originally written in the Greek language. And when you translate that, we lose a little bit of it there. Of he lived among us. Really what it says there is he pitched his tent, which is good Colorado folk. We like this language. We know what this feels like. Like if you ever have a campsite and all of a sudden you unzip your tent one morning and peer out and somebody's pitched right next to you, it's a bit uncomfortable. Immediately you're either rude or I hope that they brought some good stuff because we'll just see how this works out. He pitched his tent right next to us is what John is getting at here. To update the language a bit, God bless it. A man named Eugene Peterson several years ago said, yeah, the Bible's great, how we've translated it, absolutely wonderful. But we're hitting the 21st century, and it would be great if we could update the language. So for those of you that are like, yeah, you know, I've been meaning to like get back into reading my Bible a little bit, I cannot encourage you enough to go grab a Message translation. If you read those same three verses in the Message, here's what they say. But whoever did want him, this Jesus, who believed he was who he claimed and would do what he said, he made to be their true selves. They're child of God selves. These are the God begotten, not the blood begotten, not the flesh begotten, not the sex begotten. And the word became flesh and blood, and it moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one-of-a-kind glory, like Father, like Son, generous inside and out, true from start to finish. If the world believed that God was generous, what a delightful place it would be. What's going on in this story? So far, John, in the first chapter of this book, has said, look, in the beginning, this guy was there, this Jesus character. He calls him the Word, the very fabric of the way that the world was created. And this Jesus, he created everything. He was the light of the world, the thing that casts out darkness. There's all these big ideas that John's writing as he's beginning the introduction to his gospel. And now there are good ways to live. There are books that have been written about how to live the best way. There are celebrities, some, not all, who are good role models. But rarely do you get to meet them. And even if you get to meet them, rarely do you get to know them. John has been talking about God as if he's like this really big idea. Of course, he's real, but like he's out there. He's awesome. He's big. He's powerful. He's perfect. And we've covered that. But here he turns a corner. Here in these verses, this God who's amazing and huge and big concepts, he puts on flesh and bone. He becomes a person and he moves into our neighborhood, as Peterson translates. God's making it plain. Look, I'm not just a set of ideas. I'm not just a bunch of religious principles that we kind of tie all together. I'm your neighbor, as tangible as Henry on my Blink doorbell. You could see his face. You could touch him. You could hear him. You could listen as he was lighting firecrackers on your driveway because he snuck some out of his dad's garage, which is a good reminder, kids don't play with fire. But it tells us something really special. Sometimes there's philosophies or there's religions out there where like, you gotta be super smart, or you have to be the most disciplined or the one who's the most willing to go the furthest, but it's only for a select few if you really wanna get in on the goodness. And here John is saying, that's not how it is with this story. If you have the ability to have a friend, if you can be a neighbor to someone else, which I think all of us can, in that case, this story is for you. It doesn't matter how smart you are or how disciplined you can make yourself. It's freely given to every single one of us. And he says, we've seen his glory, the glory of the one and only. John saying, I was an eyewitness. I was his friend. You want to know what somebody's like? Talk to their friends. Read the books that they write about their friend. The point is not simply that John is saying, neener, I got to be friends with the God of the universe. He's saying, I want to introduce you to him. Because my friend is your friend. He wants to be with you. That's why I wrote all this down. But I think this is where Christianity can sometimes be misunderstood. Because is Christianity just about agreeing about something that happened a long time ago? Like this man named Jesus lived and he died on a cross and then he came back to life. Like is that it? Is that what we're doing here tonight? We're just remembering something that happened. Frankly, believing that something like that happened may not actually be all that life-changing. I believe that Victor Wembanyama is real and that if he hugged me, I would really enjoy it because it would make me feel like a little boy all over again and that would be delightful. But I don't know that that changes my life all that much. And I believe that Santa is real and that he's friends with the elves, but because I'm on the naughty list most years, that actually doesn't change my life, but it may for some of you. But what does it mean to not just believe that something is true and real? What if that's not what John's writing this for? He uses some really particular language here that I just want to briefly dip into. John 1:12, he says it this way, but to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave the power to become children of God. This idea of to all who received him, who believed in his name. I just want to camp out for a second. There's a couple different ways that you can say that in the original Greek as John is writing this down. You're going to use a base word it's the word pistuo, which is really fun to say, kids in the room. If you ever just mad at your parents, just pistuo. I don't know. It's funny. Pistuo, but pistuo hoti, that's a way to say believe. Pistio hoti basically means to believe that. To believe that something has happened. It's generally past tense, has to do with something historical. It affected people's lives a long time ago. But that's not the word that John uses here. He says pistuo eis, which means to believe in something. It's a present tense. It does affect your everyday life. Either way, it's a wild word to use here, to believe. But what he's saying is not, I wrote this down so you believe that Jesus happened. I want you to believe in him. So what's the difference? I think this is like going to the doctor's office. If I believe that my doctor is smart and wants me to stay alive, that's a lot different than me believing in her. Because I may or may not do what she's telling me to do, but if I believe in my doctor, it means that I do what she says. I eat what she tells me to eat. I exercise the way she tells me to. If I ever need her to perform a surgery on me, I'm not grabbing her tools as she's coming at me and mansplaining to her exactly how to take out an appendix. I'm holding still because I believe in her. I know that she's trained. She knows that she's doing far more than I do. And I don't think it's overstating it to change the language a little bit to just say, I'm submitting to her leadership in my life. What she says, that's what we're going to do. I'll follow her instructions. Or, to put this in a different metaphor, I can believe that Henry is my neighbor, but frankly, it's not all that life-changing. I can have lots of neighbors, but if I never have them over to my house, if we never have dinner together, if we never go out to play, it's really just information. Sure, they live down the street, but I can also treat Henry as my neighbor in a way that's pretty life-altering. When he rings my doorbell, I can answer. When he says, can you come and play? I can say yes. And when he says, do you want to shoot each other at point blank with Nerf guns and see how it feels? I can decide if that crosses boundary for me or not. But this kind of belief in Henry, it's so much more than knowing that he's my neighbor. It's experiencing him as my neighbor. And that's the difference that John's pointing out here. This idea of believe, this pistuo eis that he's talking about, it's about much more than knowing something is true in your mind or in your heart. It means that you live out that truth with your whole life. He wants to introduce you to his friend, not just so that you have more information on somebody else who wants to be your friend in this world. He wants to introduce you to Jesus because this Jesus wants to be your friend too, and he is dead serious about this. John is saying, look, you have a new neighbor. He lived right down your street. He's moved into your life. He's got a body and a life story, and he's in this broken down world just like you, and you can actually know him. And placing your belief or your trust in Jesus is simply like going out to play with him when he comes to ring your doorbell. Not from a distance, not as a historical character that you believe happened, but in a way that changes your daily life. And so all this is pretty great news, but John has one more thing that he's not quite done yet explaining. Because John's saying, look, you don't just have a new neighbor. It's not just saying that I don't want you to just believe that he's your neighbor, but I want you to believe in him. He's adding one more thing. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave the power to become children of God. He's moved into the neighborhood, and this Jesus has come knocking on your door, half naked, dancing on the mailbox. Say, hey, do you want to come out and play? By the way, you're adopted if you want to be. You want to come over to my house, like, forever? If you've ever experienced life in this world in ways, you're just like, man, this just ain't right. Living in this home where you look around, whether it's relationships, places in your story, addictions that we face, just the broken dreams and the broken bodies that we experience time and again. I think there's good reason to wonder at the thought of somebody inviting you to a different home, especially when you look at the type of people that come walking out of that home, people like this Jesus. He's saying, you have been adopted into this family. And that will mean some things. Jesus is saying, if you believe in this news, if you're willing to trust me with your life, well, here's what time we eat dinner every night. Here's how bedtime works. I think just like being adopted, particularly in this family, he'd say some more things a little more directly. Here's who we love.
And by the way that we talk about love in our house, it starts with loving yourself. So we're going to begin there, but we love everybody. So buckle up, because that's a trip. Here's how we spend our time in this family. Here's how we spend our money in this family. Here's how we talk in this house. Here's how we listen in this house. And if you're paying attention, you're likely starting to think, it seems like there's a lot of information that comes with being adopted into a new family. It would be great if we had like some examples to follow or some conversations that have been written down. Is there more content? And I think it's here that you would find John as the author of this whole book smiling back at you going, I thought you'd ask. I spent a lot of time with him. I wrote down everything that seemed the most important, although if he says at the end of the book, if we wrote down everything, there's not enough books in the world. But I hit the high notes. If you want to know him, it's all here. John offers you his best work. The story is of his friend who is coming for you too. You can read it for yourself. Certainly, again, I can't recommend highly enough the message, but if you want to come back and hang out with us for the next 5 months, we'll just be taking a nice long soak looking at John's friend, Jesus, and wondering at what he's like and what it means to be adopted into that family. But our culture makes a lot of fuss this time of year. This is why God moved in next door, and he's come knocking, and he wants you to be a part of his family. And as we consider this story, we remember that Christmas is not just a time for looking backwards and remembering something that happened a long time ago, but it's also an invitation to look ahead. As this book finishes, we learn that Jesus leaves, but only temporarily, and that one day he's coming back. So part of what we celebrate today is the anticipation that one day each of us will get a knock on our door. And standing on the other side will be a half-naked kid dancing on your mailbox saying, you want to play forever? And you'll get to answer that question for yourself. And the delight is you don't have to wait until that day comes. That's the question of Christmas, of every day. You want to come out and play. So as we celebrate this season, I hope that as he knocks that you hear him. And not in a way that leaves you believing that he's knocking, but in a way that sends you out to be with him and to trust him and to believe in him, to form your whole life around him. And in it all, I have one final invitation for us. Christmas Day can be a bit nuts. The next 24 hours, so many things are about to happen. Presents and food and visitors and visiting. And it can all happen kind of fast. And the older of a kid that you become, particularly as you hit into the adulthood years of childhood and beyond, it can all happen kind of fast. Like it's hard to enjoy it, to feel like a holiday actually happened, and it can feel a little hollow. At Discovery, we love the invitation that's been long held by the historical church that observes something that we call Christmastide, these 12 days of Christmas. Now, we're still only going to do presents on one day, so don't get too crazy unless you have a bunch of golden rings and partridges to give away. But the 12 days that are following Christmas Day, we simply get to enjoy intentionally the meaning of Christmas, the invitation of Christmas. It's not like celebrating the fact that a baby was born on Christmas Day and then suddenly that baby just vanishes. It's 12 days of going, he's here, and he's here to stay. And that changes my life. There's so many different ways and tools that are out there that can help you really observe intentionally this holiday of Christmastide. One of those we just have listed on our website right now. If you just click the button right on the homepage, it says Advent 2025. On that next page, one of the first buttons that you'll see is a link that will take you to an author named Kate Bowler and her Advent and Christmastide devotional. It's called A Good Enough Advent and Christmastide. If you just flip ahead to the Christmastide sections for the next 12 days, we'll just slowly walk you through in a very gritty and earthy way that Kate is so good at doing, of celebrating and observing and hearing the doorbell ring as you pay attention to this neighbor who's moved into your neighborhood. So as you consider tonight and tomorrow and the days that are coming, continue to wonder at what it is that we're celebrating. But as you continue your celebration, and as we continue it together here tonight, man, we have so much to be grateful for. So I'd love to invite those of you who are able, let's stand together and sing.